Okay, good.
Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahavidyan Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om. Welcome back. Welcome also to the students attending this class regularly online. Last week we started the next chapter, chapter 14. Again, the chapters of Uddhava Gita do not have names like those of the Bhagavad Gita. But we observed that Sri Krishna began this chapter, I joked with you, he began with a bang, so to speak, by beginning to discuss enlightenment. Without a question, the chapter begins. Sri Krishna plunges into this very profound discussion about enlightenment. Before we pick up the thread here, in the tradition of Advaita Vedanta, and this text is a text that conforms to the teachings of Advaita Vedanta, it's often said, Shankara is quoted, as saying, jnanam eva mokshaha, enlightenment, moksha, liberation, inner freedom, is jnanam eva. It's in a form of knowledge and knowledge alone. And when you first hear this, or when you are completely foreign to this tradition of Advaita Vedanta, that doesn't sound good. What do you mean knowledge is enlightenment? I know so many things already, and none of the things I've learned so far have made me enlightened. So is learning some Advaita Vedanta texts, including Uddhava Gita, is that going to make me enlightened? Well, this confusion, of course, it's a reasonable objection, and it's a natural objection when you fail to distinguish, and here we need to be a little bit better educated about some Sanskrit terminologies, that is, there are two kinds of jnanam, knowledge. In fact, there are many, but we're going to talk about two primary kinds of knowledge, and the Sanskrit terminology is a little fancy. We make a distinction between paroksha jnanam and aparoksha jnanam. Paroksha means remote, distant, indirect. Indirect knowledge is like when you see smoke rising over the mountain and you gain knowledge that there is fire. Wherever there's smoke, there is fire. This is indirect knowledge. It's inferential knowledge. And when you read a scripture that says tattvamasi, your true nature is identical with the reality of the cosmos, when you first read that, is that direct knowledge or indirect knowledge? That's obviously indirect at first, like seeing, like your knowledge of the fire. So, jnanam can mean this indirect knowledge. Jnanam also is used to refer to aparoksha jnanam. An example of aparoksha jnanam is compare your knowledge of the fire of the mountain, on the mountain, indirect, to your knowledge of me sitting on this chair. Those are very different kinds of knowledge. One is obviously indirect. Your knowledge of me sitting on this chair, on the other hand, is clearly direct knowledge, aparoksha jnanam. When Shankara says, jnanam eva moksha, he's obviously not referring to indirect knowledge, scriptural knowledge, the knowledge you get from reading scriptures. He's referring to a direct knowledge, which is an immediate and personal discovery of your true nature. You discover it within yourself, like with your eyes open, you see me sitting here, In this case, with your mind open, so to speak, you discover your true nature as Satchidananda Atma. Now, there's a relationship. This introduction is important to help us understand the next few verses. There's a relationship between this indirect scriptural knowledge and the direct knowledge of self-discovery. The relationship is, in order to gain that self-knowledge, which is direct knowledge, you need some guidance. If you are going to engage in a process of atma-vichara, self-inquiry, all of Vedanta is basically a process of self-inquiry. If you're going to do this atma-vichara, self-inquiry, it has to be guided. Guided by what? That's the role of the scriptures. A metaphor I've used many times, we'll expand it a little bit here, is using a map. Suppose you're going to... Vasanti always complains, why do you use these old-fashioned metaphors? No one uses a map anymore. And she's right. No one uses a map. But I like the metaphor, and certainly from my generation, there was no GPS in the 1960s. All right. So, and most of you anyway, you remember using paper maps, so it's not a big deal. Okay. Good thing we don't have to use them anymore. They're pretty much of a nuisance, but you don't have to. It's still, I think, a helpful metaphor. A map has a lot of information on it, right? Like, scriptures have a lot of information. All of that is paroksha jnanam, indirect knowledge. And here just for fun, suppose you're in the 1960s, you are driving from wherever you live to Disneyland. By the way, there was no Disneyland in Florida in those days. If you wanted to visit Disneyland, you had to go the other direction to California. The Florida one came later. So you get into your car with your children. Yeah, I'm trying to remember, my parents had a blue Oldsmobile. I still remember some of this. So we get in this blue Oldsmobile and drive across country, guided by the map, to find this place someplace in California. And while you're driving, of course, you have the, not guidebook, like a pamphlet that tells you all about the place. So you're reading that pamphlet, and it shows you these wonderful pictures of Mickey Mouse and all of this stuff you're going to see in Disneyland. Tell me, when you read the pamphlet, you get direct knowledge or indirect knowledge of Mickey Mouse? Then you go and finally get there. You get out of your car, you go inside, and lo and behold, you have direct knowledge of Mickey Mouse. This is a side issue. I just have to tell you this joke. It's not really a joke. It's an anecdote or an observation and an interesting one. The first time I went to Rishikesh, this is the 1980s, I saw all these families. They brought their children. And I was wondering, wait a minute. I thought, you know, Rishikesh is a place of yoga and Vedanta and meditation. Why are all these children here? Well, the parents are bringing the children for darshan of Ishvara in all these sacred temples in Rishikesh and further up in the mountains. And a joke you may have heard me tell before, in India, you take your children for darshan in all these sacred places in America. You take your children for darshan of Mickey Mouse. Anyway, I like the very striking contrast. Of course, in India is not much different nowadays. We understand that. Okay. I don't know. They don't have no Disneyland in not yet. Wait. Okay, sorry for the detour. Important. Indirect knowledge of Mickey Mouse versus direct knowledge of Mickey Mouse. Indirect knowledge of Satchidananda Atma versus direct knowledge of Satchidananda Atma. Got it? And Sri Krishna is going to use a slight variation of words. He's going to use jnanam, which means knowledge, but he's going to use it for the indirect knowledge. Paroksha jnanam, indirect knowledge. Then he's going to add a syllable and make it into vijnanam, which means a special kind of knowledge. He's going to use vijnanam for aparoksha jnanam, direct knowledge. We'll see that in these verses. We'll begin where we left off. Tasmad jnanena sahitam, tasmad jnanena sahit jnatva svatmanam uddhava, jnatva svatmanam uddhava, jnana vijnana sampanno, jnana vijnana sampanno, bhajamam bhakti bhavatah, bhajamam bhakti bhavatah. Tasmat, he says, and he ends the verse, Uddhava. Therefore, O Uddhava, I should not end. End of the first half, second line. Tasmat Uddhava, therefore, O Uddhava, jnanena sahitam, sahitam, along with the help of jnanena. Jnana is our indirect knowledge. With the help of indirect knowledge, jnatva svatmanam. Jnatva, having discovered svatmanam, your true self, and there comes the direct knowledge. With the help of indirect scriptural knowledge, like with the help of the roadmap, you gain direct knowledge, svatmanam. Is this working? Yeah, my ears are not working. Okay. With the help of these scriptures, you discover your true nature, svatmanam. And he says, then, jnana vijnana sampannaha. Sampanna, one who is endowed with what? Jnana, indirect knowledge, scriptural knowledge, and vijnana, direct knowledge. Self-discovery, the word that many people like nowadays, self-realization, simply means discovering your true nature. So endowed with scriptural knowledge, having the roadmap, and having reached your destination. You can have a roadmap and never walk out the front door of your house, which is a little bit like having the Bhagavad Gita on your bookshelf and never opening it up, right? You have the roadmap, you're not on a journey. The purpose of these scriptures is to guide us on the scriptural journey. So, endowed with both this, having the scriptures, being guided by the scriptures to the end of the journey, which is the discovery of your true nature as Satchidananda Atma, then what? Bhakti bhavataha, with the attitude of devotion, bhaja mam, you should worship me. Now that last line seems out of context. Worship me, I thought he was talking about direct knowledge and indirect knowledge, then suddenly worship me. Where does that come from? American expression, it comes from left field. That's a baseball metaphor. How American can you get? Okay. Comes from left field is a metaphor based on baseball. Why left field? Most of the time, the ball goes to left field, if I remember baseball correctly. So why is the metaphor comes from left field? It should be. It comes from right field, where there are less balls go into the right field. You don't need a lesson in baseball. Let me stop right here. So what is the connection then between this knowledge, direct knowledge, indirect knowledge, and Bhaja Mam, worship me? Well, from our study of Bhagavad Gita and from our study of the prior chapters of the Uddhava Gita, we see again and again Sri Krishna describes himself as dwelling within you, as Satchidananda Atma. So here in this verse, in third line, Swatmanam, your true self, and in the last line, Mam, me, these words point to the very same reality. This is lovely. And this is the glory of the Bhagavad Gita and the glory of the Uddhava Gita, where we have that opportunity to hear Sri Krishna say again and again, I am the divinity that dwells within you as your true nature. That's what he says so many times, and that's exactly what he's saying here. It also shows another really important point. In general, religions seem to describe God as being remote. As a child, I used to pray, Our Father who art in heaven. That was an important prayer for Christians. And, of course, in the Hindu tradition, where does Lord Shiva dwell? Mount Kailasa. in the common religious mind, Mount Kailasa. Or in some loka, where does Sri Krishna live? Goloka. Or even Vrindavan. Vrindavan is not here in New Jersey. So Vrindavan, the physical place, is near Mathura, and it's not regional. Or Narayana dwells at the bottom of the Milky Ocean. All of these common religious portrayals of God has God as being distant or remote. How remote is Sri Krishna when he says, I dwell within you as your own essential nature? Not a trace of remoteness. And that perhaps is one of the unique features of the Vedantic approach to religious topics. Mostly religion functions at this more superficial level. Our Father who art in heaven, Lord Shiva dwelling on top of Mount Kailasa. But if we go more deeper into this Hindu tradition, we arrive at the teachings of Advaita Vedanta, in which Sri Krishna says, I am not remote. God, Ishvara, is not remote, dwelling within you as your essential nature. Okay, next. Jnana vijnana yajnena, jnana vijnana yajnena, mamishtvatmanamatmani, sarva yajnapatim mamvai, sarva yajnapatim mamvai, samsiddhim munayogaman, samsiddham munayogaman. All right. Jnana vijnana yajnena. Where's the verb? Mam siddhim munayaha agaman. Okay, start at the end. In just a trick, if you want to understand a Sanskrit verse, there's usually one or more verbs in the verse. And a good way to begin is find the verb. And the verb leads you to the subject, and then you can quickly understand the meaning. So, munayaha, the munis, and we'll get back, we'll come to this again at the end. Bunayaha agaman. The munis reached. What did they reach? Mom, me. How did they reach me? Now go up to the top. How did the munis reach me? Jnana, vijnana, yajnena. Here's our jnana and vijnana again. Jnana, indirect knowledge. Vijnana, direct knowledge, self-realization, discovery of your true nature. So jnana, vijnana, yajnena. Through this yajna, Sri Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita uses the expression jnana, yajna. Yajna, as you know, is a fire ritual. And in a fire ritual, you should offer something. So in this jnana yajna, what are we offering? The superficial meaning is silly. The jnana yajna, what do you offer into the ritual fire? You offer your scriptures. Book burning was very popular in Germany in 1932. But it's not obvious. I'm giving a horrible example of book burning, right? So just to make the point that jnana yajna is not about jnana yajna is not about indirect knowledge. We need these books. Although you might remember, was it last week I gave the example from that razor's edge? You can go back and recall, watch that video again. I won't go there again. But here, the term jnana yajna is not with reference to indirect knowledge, but with reference to direct knowledge. Direct knowledge means self-discovery. In that process of self-discovery, what's being metaphorically offered into the ritual fire, what's being destroyed in the flames? Ignorance, ego, desire. You get it? This is direct knowledge. So jnana yajna, in the flames of knowledge, one offers, one gets destroyed. What gets destroyed? Ignorance, ego, desires, all that causes suffering is destroyed in the metaphoric fire in this jnana yajna. So, munayaha agaman, the rishis gained mam, me, Sri Krishna says, jnana vijnana yajnena, through this metaphoric ritual involving jnana, indirect knowledge, and vijnana, direct knowledge, ishtva, having, this is a pun. Any of you good enough in Sanskrit to recognize the pun? I don't think so. Ishtva has two meanings derived from, I didn't see this before, and rarely do you see a legitimate pun in Sanskrit. They're there, and they're used intentionally. So here's the pun. Ishtva is a verb. It can be derived from two different verbal roots. One is ish, to desire. The other is yaj, to worship, to offer into a fire, right? Yaj becomes ishtva. Am I correct, Vasanti? Yeah, she's sitting in back. She's my dictionary. She is pretty good. I'm just checking my dictionary here. So, ishtva then has two meanings from two different roots. Ishtva, having desired mom, having desired to find mom, me who is atmanam, your own true self, as we just saw in a prior verse. So having desired to find me, atmani, in yourself. Atmanam, atmani. You find the true self within yourself, ishtwa, having desired that, but the meaning I took was the second meaning, from yaj, to worship. So ishtwa, having offered, so having offered your ignorance, nice, having offered your ignorance and ego into the fire of jnanam, in doing so, you worship Ishvara. How do you worship Ishvara? Ignorance and ego come in the way of relating to Sri Krishna's presence within. If you have not immediately and directly discovered that inner divinity, Sri Krishna's presence within you, why haven't you discovered there are two big bullies preventing you from getting there? One is called ignorance and one is called ego. They won't let you penetrate within to make that discovery. But when these two obstacles are burnt in the fire of knowledge, they are offered into that symbolic fire of knowledge. In this way, ishtva mam, in this way you worship me, atmanam, me as your true self, atmani, in yourself. And the metaphor continues, you worship me, sarva yajñapatim. Yajñapati, literally the lord of a yajna, means the one who is being worshipped through a yajna. Sometimes you're worshipping Lord Shiva, sometimes you're worshipping Lord Vishnu, and in this case, we're worshipping Lord Krishna. But worshipping Lord Krishna as Swatmanam, as your true self. Okay. So worshipping Lord Krishna as yourself, and Sri Krishna says he's the Yajñapatim, he is the master of all rituals. Some people make a bad joke out of this. When you are doing a yajna, you have an offering. Indraya swaha, Vishnave swaha. This offering is unto Indra. This offering is unto Lord Vishnu. So here, the joke, not much of a joke. You know, sannyasis are not known for great jokes, but try this one out. So Sri Krishna says he is Yajñapati, means that he gets your oblation before they can reach Indra or Lord Vishnu. He snatches it away. As I said, not much of a joke. What can you expect? All right, let's finish his verse. So in this way, the Munayaha, the sages, Agaman, they reached Mam, me, which is Samsiddhim, which is a state of perfection. Samsiddhim means moksha, liberation. To reach Sri Krishna's presence within, to discover your true nature as Satchidananda Atma, that is moksha, that is Samsiddhi, perfection, the highest goal. The Muniyaha, Agaman, they reached. By the way, one definition of Muni is, in Sanskrit, they say manana shila, one who is endowed with a capacity to think. Can you think? You're all Munis. And I'm making an important point. Don't think that this discovery is reserved for those handful of Munis you've seen in the movies or sitting inside a cave someplace with matted hair and all of this stuff. And don't think it's reserved for them. It's reserved for anyone who's capable of thinking. That's the meaning of Muni. You're capable of thinking. You're capable of discovering exactly what the ancient sages discovered. You are endowed with a mind fully capable of discovering what the ancient rishis discovered. Okay, this is the last verse of Sri Krishna before Uddhava's question. And here, Sri Krishna uses, actually, Sri Krishna, This verse is written in a very long meter. You can see how long the lines are, and we have to chant it correctly. So let me try to chant it correctly for you. You can listen and repeat. Twayuddhava shrayati yastrivido vikaro. Twayuddhava shrayati yastrivido vikaro. Mayantara patati nadya pavarga yuryata. Mayantara patati nadya pavarga yoryata janmadayo yasya yadami tavatasya kim syuhu janmadayo yasya yadami tavayasya kim syur adyantayor yarasatosti tadeva madhye adyantayor yarasatosti tadeva madhye. There are many suprabhatams which have been written, which are recited in the morning, and many of them will use this particular meter, 14 syllables in a line compared to our usual meter with just 16. By the way, this really supports something you've heard me say before, and that is, these are not the literal words of Sri Krishna speaking to Uddhava. Does anyone speak like this? Can you imagine in a casual conversation trying to speak in this meter? With all of its rules, and not just rules in terms of how many syllables in a line, but there's a certain pattern of long and short syllables. Suppose you had to figure all of this out before you said anything. You wouldn't say anything at all. The rules are too complex. Anyway, you've heard me say before, these scriptures, including the Bhagavad Gita and Uddhava Gita, are not literal transcripts. They are the words written by Vyasa. Of course, we consider Vyasa to be Sarvajna, all-knowing. So Vyasa knew the mind of Sri Krishna. Vyasa knew the actual words spoken by Sri Krishna. And based on Vyasa's understanding, Vyasa composed these verses. Obviously, Vyasa is a pretty skillful poet to write like this. Lovely, really lovely. And we'll see more of this nice poetry in the coming verses. So, he begins, Twayi Uddhava. Uddhava, he addresses his cousin. What do you say? Yeah, in Hinglish, your cousin brother. Right? They call that Hinglish, right? Hindi English. All right. Twayi. In you, O Uddhava, there is yaha trividaha vikaraha. There is a threefold modification. Could be understood in several ways. I think a simple way is three gunas. The gunas undergo modification to become your physical body. They undergo other modifications to become your subtle body. So these gunas, which undergo modification, ashrayati, they abide where? First word, twayi, in you. O Uddhava, the three gunas which undergo modifications to comprise your physical and subtle bodies, they abide in you. They abide in your physical body. They abide in your subtle body. And maya antara apatati. Apatati. They I'm just trying to be a little, trying to be close. Yeah, my translation is fine. Apatati, they arise. That's a good translation. They arise antara, within you. So the gunas, which make up your physical and subtle bodies, apatati, they arise in you due to maya. And maya here, maya, we've seen this word several times, and I've warned you again and again, don't translate it as illusion. In Advaita Vedanta, it can mean illusion, but it usually doesn't. Maya usually refers to the creative power through which the world of duality arises from a non-dual source, Nirguna Brahman. This is our most commonly used definition of Maya in Advaita Vedanta. Maya Shakti, a creative power, creative capacity. So, you get born with a body and mind made of gunas because of this creative capacity through which this world functions, through which an embryo is conceived, a mother carries it full term, and you are born. But now Sri Krishna makes an interesting point. He's teaching Uddhava about enlightenment, and he's saying, Uddhava, you might be a little confused about this because na, this is the end of the second line, na adya apavarga yoho yata. He says, yet this trivedha vikaraha, this threefold modifications of gunas, it arises, and here I need to paraphrase a little bit. It arises when you're born. Your body, the obvious thing, your body arises at birth. There's like one birth at conception and another birth 9 months later. You can think of it in these terms. But he says that this subtle body and physical body don't exist adya and apavarga yoho. They don't exist before or after. Before conception, there is no physical, we'll just stay with physical body, I think. Before conception, there's no physical body. Nor is your subtle body present. Your subtle body may exist, but it's not present here now in this worldly dimension. So before conception, there's no physical or subtle body. Apavarga means end here. And at the end means, in fact, they call it antyeshti, antya ishti, the final sacrifice. By the way, there's that root yaj again for our Sanskrit students. Yaj becomes ishti, that final sacrifice. If you spend your life offering ghee into a fire, you will, even after you're dead, you make one more sacrifice. While you're alive, you're offering ghee. When you're dead, your last sacrifice. You offer your physical body into the flames of cremation. That's apavarga. So physical body doesn't exist before conception, doesn't exist after death. Subtle body isn't present here before conception or after death. So he says the message the teaching comes in the next line. So he says, this body and mind, which are born due to this creative power of Maya, born of three gunas, they exist now while you're alive, but they didn't exist before and they won't exist later. And so then Sri Krishna gives us this teaching. He says, therefore, Uddhava, janma adayaha, birth, death, old age, all that we go through in this lifetime, yad ami, these. yadami janmadayaha. These transformations you go through while you're alive, think of how much we transform in our lifetimes. From that embryo, imagine one cell. We start out as one cell. Mind-boggling. In 9 months, we go from one cell to this little thing. And then in 9 months after that, you go from this little thing to this little thing. 9 years after that, you go from this little thing to this little thing. And you keep going. Throughout our lives, we are continually undergoing transformation. All of that transformation, yadami, janmadayaha, all of these transformations belong to the physical body and subtle body, invested with a subtle body. And, O Uddhava, you're so focused on that physical body. You're so identified with this physical body, which continually undergoes transformation, a physical body which didn't exist before conception, won't exist after death. And he says to Uddhava, Tasya kim syuhu? What is it for you? Your physical body, what is it to you, to what you, swatmanam, Sri Krishna referred to before. Physical body doesn't exist before conception, but as Satchidananda Atma, most certainly you existed, Uddhava existed. After your body is offered into that cremation fire, your physical body will cease to exist. What happens to you? And what an odd observation. What people ask, Swamiji, what happens at the time of death? Well, you know what happens to your physical body at the time of death. If you ask, though, what happens to Satchidananda Atma, your true self, at the time of death, the only correct answer is nothing. Nothing happens to consciousness at the time of death. So Sri Krishna asks, Uddhava, kim syuhu tasya? Why are you so attached to this physical body when it comes and goes? And here we begin, Sri Krishna is leading up to a very important statement about your true self, your real self. In Sanskrit, we have a definition for real, which is an amazing definition. Trikala abaditam is our definition for real. That which is non-negatable in the past, present, and future means that which exists now, that which has always existed in the past, that which will always exist in the future, meaning that which was never born, that which is immortal, not subject to death. That is Atma. That is real. Compared to Atma, how real is this body? You can't say the body is unreal. Unreal is a term we reserve. This is a metaphor I've given many times, an example I've given in our Vedanta class. You can join us tomorrow. We're having a lot of fun, as it were, in that Vedanta class. The example I keep giving is unreal is a word for the elephant I'm holding in my hand. The elephant I'm holding in my hand is unreal. Is your physical body like the elephant I'm holding in my hand? No. Not at all. So don't say your body is unreal. But is your body as real as Satchidananda Atma, which was never born, which is immortal, not subject to death, which exists continually? Is your body real like Atma is real? Absolutely not. Your body is not absolutely real like Satchidananda Atma. Your body is not unreal like the elephant in my hand. Your body is, to use the correct Sanskrit term, mithya. Mithya is an intermediate level of reality, often translated as dependent reality. The pot is mithya because its reality is dependent on clay. You don't say that the pot is unreal like the elephant, nor is the pot as real as clay. Okay, now we got our terms. And now in the last line here, Sri Krishna actually refers to this definition of reality. He says, Adya antayoho asataha asti, tadeva madhye. Actually, a counterexample. Yad asati, yad asataha asti, that which doesn't exist. Asataha asti, that which doesn't exist. Tat, that which doesn't exist. Adya, in the beginning, like before conception. And anta, at the end, like after death. That which doesn't exist at the beginning and end, tadeva madhye. It's the same in the middle. That which doesn't exist before or after, how real is it now? Yes, the body is apparent right here, but how real is it knowing that it didn't exist before? It won't exist later. It has a limited degree of reality. So this famous statement describes the intermediate level of reality of a physical body. By the way, it's not so esoteric as you might think, this idea. This is so important. Well, let's take a moment and look at this. We don't have time for another verse anyway. Think of our classic example of the rope snake. When was the snake born? What a weird question. Of course, rope snake, you all know, is the snake you happen to see in the dark alleyway. The rope had a time when it was manufactured, right? There was a date where the fibers were woven into the form of that rope. So the rope has a birthday, like your body has a birthday. When was the snake born? So your body was born from that egg. From the egg and the sperm before that single cell existed. I pause. I just get caught up in. I'm being amazed. Remember our discussion about Ishvara's glories? The fact that you and I started out as a single cell. Bah! That Ishvara Vibhuti, that is just the most amazing thing. Anyway, that's a side issue. So before that cell, you had zero physicality. Before that cell. After this antyeshti, your cremation, you will have zero physicality. So how real is the physicality that exists in between? This is explained by use of this rope snake metaphor. You came from that single cell. Snakes are supposed to be born of eggs, right? Snakes are cold-blooded critters. They lay eggs. I've never seen a snake egg, but that's what the books say. So snakes are born of eggs. What kind of egg was that rope snake born of? Don't tell me it was born of an imaginary... No, no. People like to really mess up metaphors. So there was no egg. In fact, it was born of your own mind, was it not? Who created the snake? And how real is that? Somebody physically created the rope, twisting fibers together. Who created that snake? Now watch this. Did the rope exist before you entered the alley. It's like when a tree falls in the forest, no one is there to hear it. Does it make a sound? It's something, same kind of thing. Did that snake exist on the rope before you entered the alley? No. Did that snake exist on the rope after you discovered it was only a rope? No. Adyanta? Before you went into the alley, it didn't exist. After you recognize it's not a rope at all, I'm sorry, it's not a snake at all, it's only a rope, it then ceases to exist. It didn't exist before. It didn't exist later. So how real is it when you see it? That's the point. That which exists before and exists later, then its existence right now is pukka. So this body existed before I came in. When I leave the hall, this body will continue to exist. And which means, as long as I'm sitting here, this body is pretty substantial. But how substantial is that rope snake? It didn't exist before you entered the alley. It stops existing the moment you see it's only a rope. How substantial is the rope? How substantial is the snake when you see it? It is insubstantial because it didn't exist before. It didn't exist later. How substantial is your physical body? You got it. By the way, this is some sophisticated philosophy, and you've understood it completely. The body didn't exist before. Body doesn't exist later, which means its existence now is tenuous. It's not as real as it seems. This is very profound Vedantic teaching. In fact, it's so profound that Gaudapada, Shankara's teacher's teacher, his Paramaguru, Gaudapada uses this teaching in his famous Karika, in his famous commentary on the Mandukya Upanishad. It's a powerful and famous statement used by Gaudapada, used by Sri Krishna here, and you can see why it's used to shake us out of the illusion. This is a proper use of the word illusion. The illusion that the world we experience is an absolute reality. How can we say that the world we experience is not an absolute reality? Tell me, the world we're talking about is a world that you experience. The world you're experiencing right now. The world you're experiencing right now, did it exist last night while you were asleep? The world you're experiencing right now, I'm not talking about some world of atoms and energy. I'm talking about your experience. Your experience of the world that you're having right now, that experience will continue today, all day long, until you lay down. And then that experience will come to an end when you fall asleep. That experience came to a beginning when you woke up this morning. That experience will come to an end when you fall asleep tonight. It has a beginning and an end. How real is it right now? This is such a profound Vedantic teaching. I'm glad we can dwell on this for a few minutes here at the end of our class. Because many people are confused. If you say the world is real, you're wrong. If you say the world is an illusion, you're wrong. This is how we understand it. The world is neither real, like Satchidananda Atma, nor is the world unreal, like the elephant in my hand. This world is tenuously existent. It has an intermediate level of existence dependent existence. It is mithya. Now, one last question. My favorite question. You know my favorite question, right? So what? This is profound philosophy, but so what? And the message is, the world is not as real as you are. If the world is not as real as you are, how can it hurt you? Try this. How real is this elephant? Do you have to worry about this one? When I stayed in my guru's ashram in the 1990s near Coimbatore, it's near this nature preserve, there are elephants on the road. I used to go jogging in those days, not anymore. And I came across this, I was jogging and there's an elephant on the road. Jog the other way. So you don't have to worry about this elephant because it's less real than you are, right? How about the elephant you dream about? You don't have to worry about that one. It can't hurt you. It can maybe make you afraid in a dream, but then you wake up. It can even trample on you in a dream, and then you wake up. So it can't hurt you. This elephant can't hurt you. The dream elephant can't hurt you. The elephant I met on the road, can it trample Satchidananda Atma? Satchidananda Atma is more real than the elephant on the road. That's the message of Vedanta. That's so what? The message of so what is nothing in the world is as real as your true nature, Satchidananda Atma. Therefore, nothing can harm you. Nothing. There is nothing you need to be afraid of. That's a pretty big so what in my book. The reason for this profound philosophy is to arrive at this conclusion: nothing can harm you. There is nothing to be feared. Nice. Okay. Closing announcements. Tomorrow, Sunday, we have that our Vedanta class. This profound philosophy comes up again and again in Shankara's text. Come and join us at 10 o'clock for our Upadesha Sahasri class, followed at 11 o'clock by satsang. Come with your questions. We'll conclude with our prayers. Om Ganana Hantwa Ganapatigam Avamahe Kavinga Vinam Upamashravastamam Jeshtarajam Brahmanam Brahmanaspatahana Shrinvan Utibasira Sarinam Om Mahaganapataye Namaha Ishvaro Gurur Hatmeti Murti Bheda Vibhagine Vyomavad Vyapta Dehaya Dakshina Murtaye Namaha Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kamsachanuramardhanam Devaki Paramhanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat Gurum Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha Sarve Santu Niramayaha Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Ma Kashchid Dukha Bhag Bhavet Asato ma sadgamaya tamaso ma jyotirgamaya mrityor ma amritangamaya Om shanti 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 Om Tat Sat.